Okay, imagine this. A global corporation, we're talking multi-billion dollar enterprise, that wasn't just, a legitimate business gone a bit wrong. No, this was actually conceived from its very beginning as a criminal operation. That's the pretty wild story we're diving into today. Okay, let's unpack this. So in this deep dive, our mission is really to pull apart how one company, the online gambling firm 1xBet, built this global enterprise that was specifically designed to be, well, opaque, impossible to see into. You've given us a stack of sources, articles, research reports, and they really peel back the layers on this. Honestly, it's a fascinating and frankly quite unsettling case study in global corporate malfeasance. We're going to try and extract the most important nuggets to help you understand not just what this ghost company is, but really how it functions and amazingly thrives.
Yeah, and what's truly striking here, I think, is the sheer sophistication. 1xBet didn't just sort of stumble into illegality. It systematically leveraged a really complex web of shell companies, jurisdictional arbitrage, and even weaponized its own affiliate model, all to operate in defiance of international law. This wasn't an accident. It was architected, really built for systemic evasion. It's like a blueprint for how to be uncatchable. We'll show you that blueprint, introduce the key players, and hopefully demonstrate exactly how they managed to thrive, often operating on the edge, or, let's be honest, well beyond the boundaries of legality.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Our story begins not in some, flashy tech hub, but in the Russian city of Bryansk. And right from its genesis, 1xBet's blueprint, it reveals a premeditated design that's so audacious, it kind of flips the typical entrepreneurial tale completely on its head. So who are the architects here? The sources point to what they call the Bryansk Triumvirate, that's Roman Semyokin, who apparently provided the capital. They call him a Bryansk billionaire, Dmitry Kazorin, and maybe the most critical founder, Sergei Karshkov.
Right. Now, here's where that's really interesting, maybe even a bit chilling. Karshkov, one of the founders, he wasn't just some clever businessman. No, he was the former head of the cybercrimes division of the Interior Ministry's Bryansk Regional Office, a major in the Russian intelligence services. I mean, talk about having the ultimate insider advantage. How did that specifically help them build this anti-forensic shield from day one?
It's a staggering detail, isn't it? And it fundamentally shifted the whole paradigm. Normally, you'd think of a criminal enterprise learning how to be tech-savvy, learning to evade capture. But here, you had a tech-savvy law enforcement insider choosing to build a criminal enterprise from the ground up. His background gave 1xBet this invaluable built-in advantage. Like you said, an insider's knowledge of law enforcement tactics, investigation methods, digital forensics, it meant their entire operation could be architected from scratch on what we call anti-forensic principles.
So designing it specifically to be almost impossible for investigators to trace. The actors, the money flow.
Exactly. Designing it to hide in plain sight using complexity and fragmentation as a shield.
And the scale we're talking about was immense right from the start. Our sources indicate that between, 2014 and 2019, just their initial illegal operation generated an estimated 63 billion rubles, which is about $886 million at the time. I mean, to put that in perspective, that figure actually exceeded the entire annual budget of Bryansk, their home region.
It did. Which really raises the question, how does an operation that big, starting so openly illegally, manage to scale up so rapidly without being shut down immediately?
Yeah, how?
Well, it goes back to that intentional design we mentioned.
Mm.
A core component of their early strategy was this brilliant, if fundamentally deceptive, blueprint for managing risk while maximizing revenue. The dual company structure.
Ah, right. The legal clone strategy. Right. It's, like you say, a masterpiece of duality. So on one side, you've got the unlicensed, aggressive international face, 1xbet.com. This one operated under that notoriously weak license from Curacao. And it was marketed heavily through illicit channels, those ads you see embedded in pirated movie streams, illegal sports sites.
Mm-hmm. The shady corners of the internet.
Exactly. But then on the other side, you have the licensed domestic facade, OneStavka. Forbes Russia actually called this their legal clone because it operated with a proper Russian license through a company called Bookmaker Pub LLC, which founder Roman Semyokin had strategically acquired. And the link wasn't exactly subtle either. The domain 1xbet.eu actually just redirected visitors straight to 1xstavka.eu. No question they were connected.
Right. And this legal clone, 1xStavka, it was much more than just another revenue stream. It was really a strategic asset, provided stable cash flow, which they could then use to fund the much riskier global expansion of 1xbet.com. It also served as a kind of testing ground for new strategies, new software, And crucially, it acted as a safe harbor.
A safe harbor? How so?
Well, think about it. Even when the Russian authorities eventually put the founders on an international wanted list for 1xBet's illegal activities, their legal Russian business, 1xDavka, just kept operating, which obviously complicated enforcement efforts quite a bit.
Ah, okay. So it provided operational cover, financial fuel, and a legal shield all at the same time.
Precisely. It's a very clever piece of operational camouflage.
Okay, so with their domestic legal clone providing cover and cash, 1xBet was set to expand globally. But their international corporate structure wasn't about, you know, typical business efficiency or transparency. Not at all. It was designed as a defensive weapon. We're talking about a deliberately confusing labyrinth of shell companies and what you call jurisdictional cutouts.
Yeah, amaze.
This network of entities was scattered across the globe, often with just ghost offices, maybe just a mailbox in places like Cyprus. It made it nearly impossible for anyone, regulators, law enforcement, even disgruntled customers, to pinpoint a single ultimate controlling party. Each corporate cell was essentially designed to be disposable, right? To protect the hidden central brain of the operation.
Exactly. And this is a classic technique in sophisticated financial crime. It's called layering. Imagine just creating layer upon layer of ownership structures, transactions, holding companies across multiple jurisdictions. Finding the core becomes like looking for a needle in a haystack made of, well, ghost companies.
And the point is resilience.
Yes. This fragmentation provides incredible legal resilience. If one entity gets hit with a fine or gets shut down or even goes bankrupt, the core operation, the main network, it remains largely unaffected. It's built to shed parts without dying.
And absolutely central to making this labyrinth work was their smart use of jurisdictional arbitrage. Basically picking and choosing countries based on their weak spots.
Exploiting the weakest links in the global regulatory chain, yeah.
So for instance, Curaçao was chosen for its gaming licenses. Why there?
Because they're notoriously among the cheapest and least regulated in the world. They provide just the bare minimum legal status needed to operate internationally, but with virtually no meaningful oversight.
Okay, so that's where 1X Corp NV, their main international entity, was based. Minimal scrutiny.
Right.
But then Cyprus, they set up shop there too, but for almost the opposite reason.
Exactly. Cyprus was chosen for its perceived legitimacy. As an EU member state, having a Cypriot corporate registration provided a crucial veneer of EU legitimacy.
And that veneer was key for her.
For securing those high-profile sponsorships we'll talk about later, big European football clubs aren't going to partner with a company registered only in Curaçao. They need that EU respectability.
Got it. And adding another layer to this, the founders themselves got Cypriot citizenship.
They did.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating. It effectively placed them under the protection of EU law.
Shielding them from Russian extradition requests, even though they were on an international wanted list back home.
Precisely. It's another layer of insulation.
Wow. So they're using Curaçao for laxity, Cyprus for legitimacy, and citizenship for personal protection.
And the irony. Even Russia itself, despite officially banning 1xBet, seemed to remain an operational base. Investigations we looked at revealed 1xBet continued running a massive network of these sort of fake amateur sports streaming operations from within Russia, apparently with impunity.
That just seems incredible.
It really forces you to ask, how do you even begin to regulate a company like this? One that deliberately exploits the gaps between jurisdictions. It operates with relative impunity in its home country while skillfully leveraging the perceived legitimacy of others. It's a massive global regulatory headache.
It really is. And the technical side of this evasion strategy was just as complex. You mentioned mirror sites.
Oh, yeah. A massive network.
So when a regulator, say, in the UK or France blocked 1xBet's main domain,
they would instantly activate dozens, maybe even hundreds, of alternative domains, mirror sites, pointing to the same platform.
It's like digital whack-a-mole, but on a staggering scale. One investigation by the Asian Racing Federation identified something like 12,000 such mirror sites.
12,000. It's almost impossible to keep up.
And to drive traffic to these constantly shifting sites, 1xBet became one of the biggest advertisers on platforms streaming pirated content, movies, sports.
Creating this sort of symbiotic, mutually beneficial relationship with other illegal online ecosystems. They fed each other traffic and revenue.
Okay, let's talk more about that veneer of EU legitimacy they got from Cyprus. You said it was like a weapon.
In effect, yes. It was incredibly powerful, and they leveraged it systematically to achieve, really, three key strategic objectives.
Okay, what's first?
Securing top-tier partnerships. That Cyprus address, that EU stamp, was almost certainly a non-negotiable prerequisite for signing those huge, lucrative sponsorship deals. We're talking globally recognized football clubs. FC Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, and they used to partner with Liverpool, Chelsea, Tottenham Hotspur.
So these huge clubs, whether they knew the full extent of it or not, basically became reputational shields for 1xBet.
Unwittingly or not, yes. Their logos appeared alongside 1xBet's, lending them instant credibility.
Okay, that's the first objective. Second,
crucial credibility with global payment processors and banks. Moving billions of dollars internationally requires trust. Having that EU corporate structure, even if just a shell, likely made it easier to operate within the legitimate financial system with less scrutiny than a purely Curacao-based entity would face.
Makes sense. And the third objective, you said it was maybe the most cynical.
Yeah, I think so. This manufactured legitimacy, borrowed from the EU and those big club names, was then projected directly into the very markets where 1xBet was operating illegally.
How do you mean?
Think about their marketing materials in, say, Morocco or India, yeah. Places where online betting might be restricted or illegal. Those ads are emblazoned with the logos of Barcelona, PSG, famous, trusted European brands. That build instant trust with unsuspecting consumers, making them feel safe betting on the platform, effectively enabling illegal gambling on a massive scale.
Wow. So they use the legitimacy gained in regulated markets to penetrate unregulated or illegal ones.
It's an incredible illustration, really, of how they didn't just use the Cypriot framework. They fed on it. They extracted the vital resource of legitimacy itself to fuel a vast, non-compliant global operation.
Like siphoning credibility.
Exactly.
Okay, so to actually conquer these often illegal markets, they didn't just rely on sponsorships. They engineered a deeply cynical strategy. They outsourced their risk.
Mm-hmm. Through their affiliate program.
Right. One of the world's largest, apparently. It's called 1x Partners, and our sources say it boasts over 100,000 affiliates in more than 62 countries. That's huge.
It's massive. And the model is designed to push risk downwards.
How? They offer these incredibly lucrative commissions, right? Up to 40% lifetime revenue share, which is very attractive.
Very. But here's the kicker, as you said. The terms and conditions explicitly state that the affiliates are responsible for their own legal compliance in whatever market they operate.
Ah, so the core company provides the platform, the brand, the marketing materials, maybe even the mirror sites.
Well, it shifts the legal responsibility for operating in, say, India or Brazil onto the local affiliate.
Yeah.
It provides the central company with this ironclad shield of plausible deniability.
So when an affiliate inevitably gets caught operating illegally,
1xBet can just shrug and say, oh, that was a rogue agent violating our policies. We had no idea. Even if that affiliate model is their primary engine for growth in that region.
It's astounding. The main growth model relies on affiliates breaking the law, but the company disavows them.
It's not just outsourcing risk. It's effectively operating an outsourced criminal network, structured for deniability. What really stands out is just how brazenly they operated in markets where they were clearly illegal.
Absolutely. Let's look at a couple of quick case studies that really highlight this pattern. Morocco, for instance. Online sports betting, there is supposed to be a state-run monopoly, but 1xBet launched a full-scale assault anyway.
Total disregard for local law.
Yeah. They deployed mirror sites like 1xbet-morocco.com. They recruited local influencers, rappers using promo codes. They even sponsored a major football club, Raja Casablanca, launched mainstream advertising, integrated with local payment systems, just completely ignored the monopoly.
And when confronted.
They apparently falsely claimed their marketing was only aimed at Moroccans living abroad, which seems unlikely given the tactics.
Highly unlikely. And India, similar story.
Pretty similar playbook, yeah. They recruited celebrity endorsers, Bollywood actors, famous cricketers, which, unsurprisingly, led to investigations. They also showed a blatant disregard for intellectual property rights. Star India actually sued them for illegally live-streaming major cricket tournaments without possessing the broadcast license.
So this pattern we see, corporate disavowal, where official claims about legality, protecting minors, respecting copyright, are just directly contradicted by their documented actions on the ground. This isn't accidental, is it?
Doesn't seem like it. It feels like a consistent, deliberate strategy, relying on that legal fiction of plausible deniability to just keep operating.
It does.
Okay, and then just when you think you've sort of grasped their playbook, the clones, the shells, the affiliates, they pull something even more surprising. This brings us to maybe one of the most chilling insights. For 1xBet, bankruptcy wasn't seen as a failure. It was used as a weapon.
A strategic tool.
Yeah. They didn't just suffer financial losses. It seems they actively engineered them to strategically shed liabilities. This calculated sacrifice of their main international entity, 1X Corp NV, in Curaçao, it really reveals a kind of masterclass in cynical financial maneuvering.
So how did that bankruptcy unfold?
Well, the proceedings kicked off back in November 2021. A player advocacy group filed for bankruptcy on behalf of, I think it was 17 gamblers, claiming 1xBet had just flat out denied them winnings totaling around 830,000 euro.
Okay, unpaid player winnings. That's common in these disputes.
Right, but crucially, the Curaçao government itself got involved, asserting that 1X Corp NV owed over 2 million guilders in unpaid taxes and fees.
Ah, unpaid taxes too. So significant liabilities were piling up against this entity.
Exactly. The legal battle dragged on, but eventually, in January 2023, the Dutch Supreme Court definitively declared 1X Corp NV bankrupt.
It's really quite remarkable, isn't it, to see a company apparently view bankruptcy not as this catastrophic failure to be avoided at all costs, but as an offensive weapon, a way to just wipe the slate clean of debts and obligations.
And the process itself sounded difficult. The appointed lawyer described 1X Corp NV as extremely uncooperative.
Not surprising if the goal wasn't to save the company, but to control its demise.
And during the proceedings, ownership of the actual 1xBet websites was reportedly shifted multiple times between different entities.
A classic asset stripping tactic, moving valuable assets, in this case the domain names and likely the user database, away from the entity that holds all the debt before it collapses.
It really underlines how deeply ingrained this whole evasive disposable design is.
Absolutely. So let's break down the cost benefit for them. What was the calculation here?
Well, think about 1X Corp NV's main asset. It was really just that Curaçao e-gaming license. We already established those are cheap, easy to get, and therefore easily replaceable.
Right. Low-value disposable asset.
Exactly. The shell company itself held no significant tangible assets, reportedly no actual bank accounts in Curaçao. It was just a legal construct.
But the liabilities?
The liabilities were substantial. Millions of euros in unpaid winnings, unpaid taxes, real debts.
So the calculation becomes pretty simple.
It seems so. It was far more cost-effective, presumably, to sacrifice this disposable shell company and its low-value, easily replaced license than it was to actually pay the millions owed to players and the government. Just cut it loose.
A calculated amputation.
Precisely. Yeah. And the ultimate proof that the strategy worked.
What's that?
Despite 1X Corp NV, which was their main public-facing international company, being declared officially bankrupt, the global 1xBet brand, the websites, the affiliate network, the sponsorships, everything just continued to function without any discernible interruption. Business as usual.
Wow. So the bankrupt entity was truly just a single sacrificial component, a shield designed to absorb blows and then be discarded, while the larger, more resilient, and truly elusive organism just carried on.
Exactly. A disposable part of a much bigger, harder-to-kill machine. So wrapping this up, what does this all mean for you, for us, navigating this complex digital world? This deep dive into 1xBet, it really reveals a kind of masterclass in global corporate malfeasance, doesn't it? It paints a pretty clear picture of an enterprise architected from its very inception for illicit profit and systemic evasion.
It really does. This ghost company, as we've called it, it thrives in the scenes between jurisdictions. It exploits lax regulations in one place, borrows perceived legitimacy from another, and basically operates with operational impunity across the globe. Its structure is its primary defense, deliberately fragmented, deliberately confusing, and ultimately parts of it are designed to be disposable.
The 1xBet case study really serves as a stark warning, I think. The labyrinth of lies it constructed isn't just its foundation, it seems to be its enduring legacy. Because despite numerous legal actions, all the public exposés we've read, even the bankruptcy of its main international shell company, the 1xBet network continues to operate and, by all accounts, continues to thrive.
And this poses a huge ongoing challenge to international regulators, to law enforcement, certainly to the integrity of global sports, which it uses for legitimacy, and to the financial industries it moves money through. Dismantling an entity like this, one that's designed to be everywhere and nowhere at the same time, it's going to require an unprecedented level of international cooperation, and maybe even a fundamental rethinking of how we regulate businesses that deliberately exploit these jurisdictional gaps.
That leads to a final thought, maybe something for you to ponder. In this hyper-connected world, how do we, just as individuals, even begin to identify and navigate entities that deliberately blur these lines, the lines between legitimate business and sophisticated criminal enterprise?
Yeah.
And maybe more fundamentally, what does a case like 1xBet challenge us to consider about what a company even is anymore, when its primary design feature seems to be simply being uncatchable?